All right, welcome everyone back to Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Sitting back today, lounging a little bit with my nerd neck. It's been termed nerd neck. I've heard other chiropractors call it tech neck. And I just want to tell everyone now, work on your posture if you're in IT. Get a standing desk, even though I am sitting and no one can see that at the moment. I have been in excruciating pain since July. I'm trying everything. Mass amounts of physical therapy, iron neck, spinning balls, all kinds of different rubber bands that I need to use. It's just my advice. I'm just advising the world now to be careful of your neck. I should have a sponsor here of some sort. Greg the Frenchman, go get us a sponsor for, I don't know, nerd neck stuff. So Eric Bloom, welcome to the show. Executive Director, IT Management and Leadership Institute. You are the man. I would like a fellow Massachusetts, kind of outside of Bostonian. I'm originally right outside of Worcester, so I'm sure you guys have plenty of jokes about the guys from Worcester, like a bunch of wicked mothers from Worcester. A welcome to the show. Can I say founder of the Leadership Institute?
Yes, you can.
Okay. So, how did you get into, IT leadership? Did you fail miserably at first and have many nights crying yourself to sleep? And then you figured, I need to learn how to do this. And now I'm going to teach other people how to not cry themselves to bed. Or what was it?
Well, actually, yes. But that's when I was in an IT management role, how I got into this was, I taught, college one night a week for a bunch of years early in my career. Typical, like, it's Tuesday night, a young faculty thing. And it was always on computer-related topics. I'm going to date myself here by...
Yeah, please, I got to know what we were teaching back then.
All right, Windows 3.0, MS-DOS Essential.
Yeah. How to load. First thing, class. Okay, we're going to work on Windows today. I need you to type in cd/ and then win.exe. We're going to load Windows first. Do you remember, could you even have more than one window open back then, or was it more like window?
When Windows 3.0 came out, it was more like window. The big advantage of it is that not only was it graphical, but as I remember, it let you get above the 64K barrier for the software you were developing.
Yes. Isn't that it's amazing. I still, I say this every show, every time we talk about old technology, it never gets old. I'm saying it again. It just blows my mind that that was the thing. No one really just, that's older, past a certain age, really just understands that, you used to not just be able to use a mouse and scroll around and click on things.
It's true. What's interesting is I was talking to a friend of mine about this the other day, is when I learned computers, when I learned to be a programmer, is that, among other things, I learned assembly language. I learned how computers work. When C came out, we had to do our own garbage collection. If we didn't, we'd have, null terminated strings in our software, and all of a sudden the servers would blow up when they ran out of memory. Is that we really had to understand how computers work. We were algorithmists by nature, by programming, but we had to understand all this stuff like null terminated strings and all this weird stuff that nobody has to worry about.
It sounds like, it almost sounds like, and then if you had trainees or something or whatever it is, you'd have them, or you got to start out by taking out the garbage. It's where everyone starts out.
Absolutely.
You're going to take out the garbage for the next year. What do you mean?
Also, when I started, I actually went to school to be an accountant. They made me take a computer class. I loved it. And then worked on accounting systems or business related systems through my career. But the type of people that were programmers then are a little different than they generally are now.
Are you sure? How different?
Can I tell you a quick story?
I absolutely, please. This is a show of stories. This is really a story. This isn't even a show about IT sometimes. The other day I was talking about languages and other crazy stuff. I don't know.
I was working at Digital Equipment Corporation at the time, DEC. Great, great company. I just left because of another offer somewhere else.
I know 3 Mill in Maine. I know 3 Mill in Maine very well. Shout out to Steve Cote. Steve Cote, I'm going to have to tag you on this episode, 3 Mill in Main Street. And why is the town skipping my mind?
I was Maynard.
Maynard, yes, yes, thank mill. You. What I wonder what's in that lake there too. That's another thing. I always look out into that kind of like dirty, like is it a lake? What is that pond or the mill pond or whatever that thing is there? Anywho,
I don't know. God, I haven't been to Maynard in years.
Anyways,
I know I wouldn't drink it. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, so you're working at Digital.
Oh, at Deck. And you know, we had what was called, what was it, an LA-120. It was a keyboard printer.
Yep.
And people would use that for programming. We were programming in COBOL at the time. Anyway, mm-hmm. we had a contractor in that cube. I was in the cube next to him. Contractor was there with us for 6 months. He left. Anyway, about 2 or 3 weeks after he left, there was this awful stench coming from somewhere in our office space. So, you know, we did the old sniff test, you know, sniff here. No, I think it's a little less sniff there. So you find out where it was. We isolated it back to this LA-120 printer.
Mm.
We opened the back of it. I mean, it was a raised floor like a data center. We were pulling up tiles thinking that an animal got under there. I mean, it was awful. So anyway, we finally opened up this LA-120. And what's in it is, you know, the little half pint cartons of milk you get in like elementary school?
Yeah.
One of those opened. Uh-huh. And a little package of chocolate chip cookies opened in the back of the printer.
Was he heating it up?
Well, anyway, but you can imagine this is weeks later in a nice warm printer.
Yeah.
It was a science project back there. To give you an idea how bad it was, we decided we didn't want to even clean it. What we did was we took this like $50,000 piece of computer equipment and threw it in the dumpster.
Wow.
But anyway.
But it still worked.
Yeah, questionable. But no one used it since he was there. But anyway, I ran across him at a tech conference about 6 months later. And I said, all right, I got to ask you a question. I said, what the heck were you thinking? You know, is you left us a present in the back of the printer?
Yeah.
And he said, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I said, what happened? He said, every day, and this is the kind of techie people, at least then, this is like 1981, I think. He said every day what he would do is when he came into work, he would open up his milk and his chocolate chip cookies and put them back in the printer so that when he had them for lunch, they'd be nice and warm.
See, he was warming them up.
He was. Last day of work, we brought him out to lunch and he forgot about it.
That actually sounds more than normal. That sounds like one notch above normal programmers now. Yes, so, I'm making fun of programmers.
There were so many stories just from that time. But I tell you, I really learned computing. You know, what's been fascinating, my daughter is a genetic counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her what I saw happen to computers during my career. You know, when you think of, you know, DOS-based machines with 64K to where we are now.
Yep.
Is she's going to see happen in genetics over her professional life. You know,
I hope so. I hope they can regrow me a hip or something. Yeah.
Well, no, actually she does counseling. It's people who either have genetic issues in their family, you know, like the breast cancer gene.
Right.
You know, she does consulting. She's not like taking orders for, do you want your kids to have blue eyes? You know, I think that's illegal anyway. But she's doing, you know, like medical counseling, assisting people, or most specifically, people, you know, children are born and they don't know quite what's wrong with the child kind of stuff.
At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So, whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime due to the partnership and the sponsors that we have behind the scenes at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Let us show you how we can manage away the mediocrity and hit it out of the park. We start by mapping all of the available fiber routes, and we use our $1.2 billion in combined customer buying power and massive economy of scale to map all of your locations, to overcome construction fees, to use industry historical data, to encourage providers to compete for the lowest possible pricing, to negotiate the lowest rates guaranteed, and to provide fast response times in hours, not days. And we leverage aggregators and wholesale relationships to ensure you get the best possible pricing available in the marketplace. And on top of all of this, you get proactive network monitoring and proactive alerts so that you're not left calling 1-800-GO-POUND-SAND to enter in a ticket number and wonder, why is my internet connection down? In short, we are the partner that you have always wanted, who understands your needs, your frustrations, and knows what you need without you having to ask. So we're still human, but we are some of the best, and we aim to win. This all starts with a value discovery call where we find out what you have, why you have it, and what's on your roadmap. All you need to do is email internet@popularit.net and say, I want help managing all of my internet garbage. Please make my life easier, and we'll get right on it for you. Have a wonderful day.
It's, when I was in college, yeah, they didn't even have the entire human genome mapped out yet. It was at 1%. Yeah. And they were like, oh, we'll have the human genome mapped out however many hundreds of years from now. Yeah. And then technology got involved, and yeah, probably some sort of AI to help map that out back then to finish mapping out the human genome, which is quite the feat. It wasn't, you know, when was that? It was like 96, 95 back then. So I'm only lightly dating myself. So
that's all right. You're a kid.
You are punch card era.
Just about. A lot of my,
I was floppy disk era.
I used them for a short time. Uh-huh. You know what the computer operators did when you brought your deck to them?
Yeah. Unorganize it. I'm assuming
shuffle it and then put it in the machine and tell you your program doesn't work.
Oh, there's no, was there even a way to reorganize it? No way, right? It
would take actually, there was. Is okay. What you do is, that this is totally old school, but it's a deck of cards, right? You know, that's like 5, 6, 10 inches wide.
This what is computers. This is computers,
you take,
guys.
You take a magic marker, you know, just like a, of some sort, big black magic marker, and you put a diagonal line up the side of it.
Well, but you had to do that before they shuffled it.
Yeah, before they shuffled it. Once they shuffled it, you're done.
Yeah, forget about it. Reminds me of a CBeyond story. Anyone out there that used to work at CBeyond remembers that crazy place. So you moved into something that wasn't even a thing back then. I don't think it was a thing back then. Like, there was no like IT leadership institutes back then or anything like that, right? Didn't exist. And so now you do a training at pretty much like almost every level, I would say, or where do you start off at?
We have various sort of interpersonal communication, leading through influence classes like that for really people of most levels, individual contributor up. But where we concentrate on is soon to be managers up to about director level.
Great. So I've always wanted to ask. Well, no, I do want to ask. What do you think? And I've done hundreds of interviews, so I think I know, like if someone asked, but what is the difference between an IT manager, IT director, possibly maybe VP of IT, and CIO or CTO?
Okay, interesting. When I think of IT director, it's funny. That's not a term I often use because it means 85 different things. You could be the IT director.
I just find that sometimes IT manager and CTO. I have a couple guys that go out and try to recruit for the show, like, hey, we want you to be on the show. And then people are like, you know, like, what do I have to pay to be on the show? I'm like, no, we're literally like a real IT, literally like a real IT podcast. But on LinkedIn has become so, you know, watered down with like weird, I don't know. It's just not what it's hard to have someone actually believe that you want to have them on a podcast and talk about IT leadership. But anywho, what I find is that guys, I'm like, look for, you know, guys that have the title IT director, IT manager, CTO, CIO. And I find often that the IT director and the IT manager have the same job.
Yes.
It's just it's the same. To me, the title's the same. It's just like, what, pick one. No,
it's company and industry specific.
Correct. Correct.
For example, definitely. If you're in asset management, the chances of most likely, not all, you know, obviously when generalities, you can always find someone that's different. But like, for example, in asset management, the head IT person is generally called the CTO instead of the CIO. The reason is CIO in an asset management firm means chief investment officer. And they by no means would want to have the same initials as an IT guy.
Oh, geez.
Now, if you generally what I'll see in, like, for example, early in my career, I worked for Dun & Bradstreet Software or anyone who's had a software company kind of thing, is generally the CIO will be in charge of the IT stuff and the CTO will be in charge of the software for sale, the software engineering side.
Okay.
There are also many companies where someone will be IT director where they're in a CIO role. But for one reason or another is that either if it's a private company, is that the senior management there doesn't feel that IT warrants a chief title.
Exactly. That's a good point. I think we could talk there just for 15 minutes alone. And I guess the question is why? Because that's one of the biggest purposes of this show is to take IT from the server room to the boardroom. That's what my Greg, thank you for that, by the way. All credit to Greg Liddell from server room to boardroom for that one. Or bridging the gap where technology needs to have a seat at the executive roundtable, where nothing gets done without technology, where technology is a business force multiplier. Credit to all of the IT directors that have been on the show, CTOs, CIOs that have deemed all these terms over the years. Why would a company not want to have the IT director in a C-suite position? Is it because IT's never earned that right or has never shown their value enough? And I'm assuming that's where you guys help.
Let me begin by just asking a question and then I'll ask why. Are you familiar with the terms digital native and digital immigrant?
It's coming to my mind, but I wouldn't be able to. I wouldn't be able to define it. So please define it.
A digital immigrant to someone like me is that I grew up during my informative years. The most advanced gaming platform I had to use was the mechanical pinball machine at the arcade.
Love it.
So I'm a digital immigrant. I came to technology to use technology after my formative years.
Love it.
Now, someone, for example, my son's age.
I disagree with that, though. Just digital immigrant. I would say, founding father. I would say, you are the building blocks of it all.
Well, I didn't invent it. I learned all about it.
We actually have a clear understanding of like where things came from, like how the internet came about. I wouldn't call that immigrating, but go ahead. What's the next one? Digital nomad?
Digital native.
Native.
That's someone who grew up with technology, you know, gaming platforms, internet, all that stuff. Now, the reason I wanted to mention that back to your question is a lot of people who are most baby boomers, at least the middle to older age baby boomer, is they're digital immigrants. They did not grow up during their elementary and high school years with really effectively any technology. Result, they tend to, unless they went into it for business like I did, tend not to know it as well. It's not as important as marketing or consulting or whatever else they're doing in their business. Yeah. Now, as a result of that, they tend to remember IT from earlier in their career when, quite frankly, it wasn't what it is now. Now, everyone my age is beginning, or the baby boomers, are all starting to age out. You know, they're retiring, stuff like that. And they're being replaced by digital natives. You know, people in their 40s and 50s.
Yes.
By the way, I'm not that old, just so you know, but I'm more than 50. But anyway, I guess I gave it away. I'm 60s. But anyway, as digital natives, people who grew up with technology, move into the regular C-suite and running corporations, as many are now, is they're looking at technology differently. They're not afraid of it. They understand it. And they understand that the power they can bring to it. that they can use to transform their company. So as a result, that separation is going to be much, much less just due to demographics year by year.
I say that all the time to sometimes when we're just talking with people, and this is just advice to people listening now too. If you're looking for a job, look for, you know, a CEO that is a digital native, I guess. That's the politically correct way of saying, look for a young CEO. And then you've got, cause you've got the good old boy network. You've got some, you know, some large corporations and businesses in the United States. I don't need to mention any particular vertical markets, I guess we would call them. You can guess what they are, that are more prone to having a old school good old boy network of people, that those you find those industries to be less on the technology edge or curve.
Interestingly, some of those are changing, like warehousing. Used to, you know,
they have to be ahead.
Nothing technology. Yeah, now they have some of the most advanced robotics that are made.
Amazon effect.
Yeah. Hey, you mentioned the start of the internet. Do you remember what politician was credited for it, for inventing the information highway?
Al Gore?
Yes. Do you know that there's scientific proof that Al Gore founded the internet?
Please, because we've joked about this in the past. Like, who was it? Al Gore did it. Please, I want scientific. This is great. We need to run with this one. Again, Greg, run with this one. Al Gore.
Yes, the scientific.
I want the scientific proof that Al Gore invented it.
Okay, do you know what keeps the internet up 24 hours a day with such incredible speed, agility, and uptime?
No.
An Al Gore rhythm.
Oh, I was really hoping for some real proof.
Sorry, that's all I got.
I was like, please, do we have some more dad jokes? We need more.
Yeah,
more.
Someone will use that joke.
Oh, I'm so mad now. I wanted real proof. That's good. We just...
No, you know, the purists will say it was ARPANET, it was this other stuff, which of course it was. That wasn't just fun.
If you really do try to explain what the internet is to someone, could you? Like, what is it really? Like, I don't know, it's a mix of electricity and ones and zeros and headers and footers and packets and like, and what really is it all combined together? If we said the internet is this, this, and this, could you really describe it? It's still kind of like this mind-blowing thing to me.
It's interesting you say that. I used to be asked that a lot. And the answer that I would give is that if you take your laptop or desktop, whatever it is, you know, I'll just say laptop for now. If you take your laptop and you seal yourself in a room where you have no connectivity, anything that works on that singular PC not connected to anything is not the internet. Everything else is.
Mm. So once we take a cord and we connect it to another computer, that is the internet?
by definition, you know, it's connectivity.
There's got to be some kind of, what's the electrical factor to the internet? Is there any electricity factor to it?
I guess so. I don't have a good answer for that.
I'm sounding real dumb now. And now back to the leader of...
It's if you're connecting from one machine to another machine. I mean, it used to be direct, you know, like with modems, you dial up a phone, you connect.
Network cards. Yeah,
but internet. Internet is more, I think I like to describe it as more sort of the general collection that lets you go from anywhere to anywhere.
Hmm. It's somewhat of a miracle in my mind.
It is.
And they're like, and that's what dumb people say. You're going to say that's one sort of thing. It's not hard to imagine for us. It's hard to imagine other people life without the internet. I wonder what my kids would imagine. Like, I wonder what it was like before the internet, Dad. Well, let me tell you, we used to go out to have pizza and do things. So back to the difference between IT manager and CIO, CTO. I don't know if we really covered that.
Oh yeah. One other difference, let me say, and I'm going to go beyond the title now to the position. Mm-hmm. Is the CIO position, I'll just say the head of IT position, whatever it's called, is a very different role than being within it. Because like when I was in an IT manager role, my peers were other IT people. You know, I went up the app dev, you know, application development. So who are my peers sitting in a staff meeting? It was the head of testing, the head of help desk, operations, data center, et cetera. And my boss was an IT person.
Uh-huh.
when you move into a CIO role and it's the only position in the company, now that could be, you know, CIO of a 5-person shop in a local municipality, you know, but when you're in the head IT position, is you have no peers. Your boss is a business person of some sort, and your peers all have input into your performance review. Because IT, it's omnipresent, is that whatever business you're in, if you're the head of IT, you're supporting sales and marketing and accounting and HR and whatever else is there.
Yep.
So as a result, all of your peers have input into your performance review, which means if you ask the question, are they really your peers?
I don't know.
I would say no. The example that I use, and again, I have a financial services IT background, is stock trading. You know, the traders, it's incredible, wonderful, cool technology that's mm-hmm. used there. And a big part of my job was, among other departments also, was to support the equity trading department.
Okay.
So when it came time for my performance review, was it fair to ask the head of equity trading, hey, you know, is Bloom giving you a good, your department all the technology that it needs to be effectively doing trades? I'd say, yeah, that's a big part of my job. It's fair to have input into my performance review. When his performance review came up, do you think they asked me if he was able to find appropriate liquidity in a volatile stock market?
Mm.
No. So I ask you again, are we peers?
No.
Exactly. So that when you move into the top IT job, everybody who is your peer is also a client.
Well, that sounds like the hair club for men. Remember that?
I do, actually.
I'm also a client. What was that guy's name? Why can't I remember his name? I'm gonna have
Bixby
to think that
or something like that.
We're gonna look it up in the meantime. Let me I need a sidekick for this show from now on. It would just be great to have sidekick, and we're building out a studio as we speak. So one thing that I've heard, and people have been asking to start a community for a while, and we've tried, and I've had some other people collaborate, and how do we start a community? And then everyone's busy with their day job. And the reason why people have been asking for a community, and I'm like, well, we've got all these other communities. We have LinkedIn, we've got whatever, someone's Slack group, secret IT Slack group. And then we've got, you know, whatever else there is out there. But the reason why they're asking is because we have a significant group of IT directors and CTOs, CIOs that are within the kind of mid-market space. So I'd say 2,000 and end users or less. So not really enterprise, not small business. So it's this kind of group in America that has a significant, not problem, but a significant lot of problems when it comes to managing IT. There's constantly challenges. You're constantly wearing multiple hats. The end user to leadership ratio is about 1 to 100. So the IT director has to do, you know, whatever, vendor management and appease every department and drive the business forward and meet whatever KPIs. And I do believe that they should be using MBOs, and we can talk about that in a second. But what I find is that when they get to the top, they say it's very lonely at the top. And that goes right in line with what you said.
Absolutely.
Once you get to the top, you no longer have any peers, and now I'm alone. And who do I bounce ideas off of? And I think so.
I have a great
idea. What's your advice there? What's your advice there? What, take your course? I mean, what do we do? Like, what's your advice there?
Well, let me begin by, I'm allowed to say professional association names on and such.
I don't see why not. Okay. I mean, I've said we didn't even fly to the moon before, so I'm still alive.
So. I'm a member of SIM. It's the Society for Information Management.
Sure.
It has about 5,000 members nationwide, give or take. I don't know exactly, but about there, about 30 or 40 different chapters around the country. And yeah. Who it's really designed for is CIOs, and I'll say CIO minus one, you know, a head of app dev, head of the PMO, you know, sort of that level, senior IT positions.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a wonderful association. You know, our chapter in Boston here, I don't know, has 300-400 members.
Okay.
And the advantage of it is that you really get to, you know, not going once and listening to a speaker and then leaving. But I believe this in professional associations in general. If you go there, you know, good speaker, bad speaker, you're going to meet the people. When you become part of the fabric of the association, You know, you can go and ask questions and get really honest answers. Like, hey, I'm in the process of moving from, I'll just pick of moving from PeopleSoft to Workday. Anything I should know, or do you know a decent consultant who could help me out?
Right.
Or, you know, it's those kind of questions when you really get to know people, because they see you month in and month out, all peers of yours. They're really, really willing to share that kind of advice.
Sounds like we need to do a podcast with Sim.
Yeah, I could help you set that up very, very easily.
Let's do that.
Okay.
By the way, it was Cy Sperling. Is that right? Cy Sperling. Remember, I'm Cy Sperling, and I'm also a client. President of the Hair Club for Men, and I'm also a client. That was a great ad.
Yeah, I absolutely could set up. Mark Taylor is the CEO of Sim. Okay. Brilliant guy. I would be more than happy to make an introduction for you.
Yeah, let's get him on the
great
show.
Great association.
Let's do it. So IT directors in the IT director role might be doing well. Maybe they don't have a CTO role at the company. Maybe they do. CTO quits. Now they're interviewing for new CTOs. Why would the IT director not have that option to move into that CTO role? What do people need to be doing in an IT director role? Acting as if, meeting with various different departments in the company. What would your advice be for moving up in the world?
Okay. Should they want to?
I guess
they may or may not want to. I mean, I know individual contributors that would never want to move into an IT management role. Mm-hmm. I knew one, a friend of mine. He was, you know, the best techie often becomes the manager.
Yeah.
He did a great job IT management for a number of years, sort of sucked the life out of him. His mantra was management would be great if it wasn't for the people. He eventually went back to an individual contributor role.
But some people just want to work.
If you are the kind of person that you want to move up, I have a concept I like to say called level up management.
Mm.
And what that is you should be thinking about things from your boss's perspective. This is an individual contributor who wants to be a tech lead. It's the VP of help desk who wants to be the CIO. But if you can think of things from your boss's perspective, what it does is it changes the way you think about things. And by the way, it also helps your day-to-day job performance. Because Phil, let's say that you were my boss and you asked me to do something, whatever it was, you delegated some task. If I understood it from your perspective, you know, what were the critical success factors that you were going to judge me on, why this task was important, and so on, I would, by its nature, because I had that understanding, do a better job at it.
Mm-hmm.
But so that's one
You'd
side.
You'd probably enjoy it more, too, thinking kind of more out of the box rather than just banging the task out, I guess. I don't know.
Absolutely. Because
there's something about helping other people.
Yes.
There's something about helping other people and doing things for a reason outside of yourself that makes it just so much more rewarding.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, there's that sort of, what's the worth? What are people doing? You know, how am I helping people in the task I'm performing? Which, by the way, if they're working virtually and in their own little island working at home, mm-hmm. you know, for a manager to say, hey, you know, that report you did last week, or that program you put together, the analysis you did, that was just used by the C-suite and they landed a $50,000 deal on it. Great job. That is so motivating for people. But anyway, back to your question, is what I'd say is think about things from your boss's perspective, because not only does it position you to be doing things the way your boss would do it, but when you're talking to your boss's peers, you're doing it from almost a peer level discussion instead of, oh, wow, that's how you do things there at the vice president level. You know, you're thinking of it and you're talking it from that perspective. So you almost become the heir apparent. And then the second advantage of it is, let's say then you get that promotion. It's not like everything's new to you. You've been thinking about things from your boss's perspective for a year or two. So it's much easier for you to get more, to come up to speed on that job more quickly and be more successful.
It's excellent. I'm highly enjoying this. Are you familiar with MBOs?
Yes.
Do you think most IT leaders are familiar with MBOs?
I think they generally will refer to it as SMART goals and performance reviews, sort of the same neck of the woods, you know, mm-hmm. managing by objectives or SMART goals. It's an acronym for anyone listening may not know it, that stands for that whenever you give someone a goal, it has to be specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time-bound.
Yes. So I say achievable, but attainable. Oh, achievable. Same thing.
Yes.
Same thing. But an MBO, from my understanding, like a professional kind of from an enterprise standpoint, should be tied to a bonus structure.
Yes. The big problem with that in IT is it depends on the type of job you have.
Yes.
If you're in an operational role, like running the data center, you know, implementing or managing cloud architecture, then MBOs are awesome.
Okay.
The problem is if you're in a part of the company, for example, application development, that's project oriented.
No, I think it should just be reserved for leadership.
Pieces. Yes, like, there it works. But if you do it for MBO, for senior leadership, awesome. When you try to do it at people that do projects, projects come and go. You know, you change them. You know, the project you were working on gets canceled. Yep. You start a new one. And then if you don't update their MBOs or SMART goals, there's nothing to give them a performance review on, because you can't complain to someone that the project wasn't finished if you're the one who canceled the project.
Correct. Yes. No. I'm thinking more specifically around IT management, CTO, IT leadership. Like, if you can measure that you have created efficiencies and or grown sales by some, you know,
absolutely
measure factor. What I'm saying is I want to encourage people to think more along what can we measure? How can we measure our success? How many IT directors do you think measure their level of success or measure success, or are there more opportunities to measure?
I think there's a lot more opportunities to measure. One of the things we actually say in one of our classes is if you can't count it, it doesn't count.
Mm.
So IT does a lot of things that can, you know, increase job performance, increase productivity, reduce costs. You know, that's what we do for a living, basically. And if you can't quantify it, then everybody forgets it. If you can walk into your boss's office, or better than that, you know, into the CEO's office and say, you know, we just saved you, $200,000 by implementing this change in process.
Mm-hmm.
That's $200,000 that can be used in other things. It's quantifiable. That's absolutely the key. There's an old IBM ad when IBM moved from being just selling hardware to being a consulting type operation.
Uh-huh.
Where, I don't know if you've ever saw it, but someone runs in their boss's office carrying a nickel and says, "Boss, I saved the company a nickel." And the boss says, "Well, why should I care? We're a multi-billion-dollar corporation." And he says, "You don't understand. I'm saving a nickel on every one of the 350,000 transactions we process per day."
Superman 3.
Yeah, it's those numbers. It's those numbers that really will help quantify not only IT's great work, but also help them get extra budget.
Yes. Or the office, however you want to look at it. We're just going to shave fractions of a penny off of everyone's paycheck. We're going to just, it disappears in the system anyways. We're just going to round up or something.
At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win, and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime, due to the partnership and the sponsors that we have behind the scenes at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Let us show you how we can manage away the mediocrity and hit it out of the park. We start by mapping all of the available fiber routes, and we use our $1.2 billion in combined customer buying power and massive economy of scale to map all of your locations, to overcome construction fees, to use industry historical data, to encourage providers to compete for the lowest possible pricing, to negotiate the lowest rates guaranteed, and to provide fast response times in hours, not days. And we leverage aggregators and wholesale relationships to ensure
you get the best possible pricing available in the marketplace. And on top of all of this, you get proactive network monitoring and proactive alerts so that you're not left calling 1-800-GO-POUND-SAND to enter in a ticket number and wonder, why is my internet connection down? In short, we are the partner that you have always wanted, who understands your needs, your frustrations, and knows what you need without you having to ask. So we're still human, but we are some of the best, and we aim to win. This all starts with a value discovery call where we find out what you have, why you have it, and what's on your roadmap. All you need to do is email internet@popularit.net and say, I want help managing all of my internet garbage. Please make my life easier, and we'll get right on it for you. Have a wonderful day. So how about this? Top five things that you can think of off the top of your head that IT directors are not measuring that they should be measuring.
Ooh.
That is quantifiable, that they can start today, so that when someone listens to the show today, they can say, wow, I walked away. I actually took something away from the show other than a 1984's Hair Club for Men ad.
That might be the good, best.
And a great dad's joke yeah. Algorithm.
One thing I would say is time to completion. What I mean by that is from a business perspective.
Love that. I'm doing that right now, Greg. We're doing the website. Time to completion.
Yes. So it's if it normally takes, like this happened, who was it? Ford. You know, they implemented new technology, CAD CAM, stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
They reduced how long it took a car to get to market from, don't quote me on the numbers, I don't remember them, but like from 3 years to a year and a half.
Was I talking about that on a show the other day about how many car, I think that might've been yesterday, with how many car, how when it started out, how many like car manufacturing companies there were. There was like, you know, 50 or something, and then went down to like five. Okay.
But anyway, the faster IT can get get a project completed to market, or let me say for implementation, the faster the business people who need it.
And by the way, just credit to Prashant Natarajan for that. That was we were talking about the how the market, when a new thing comes out, is first flooded, and then there's this all of this consolidation, basically. And anyways, Henry Ford was obviously the last man standing. But
actually, I'm glad you said that, because a second measurement is the percentage of, or let me say the, I'll say the percentage of technologies that were selected that actually made it.
Oh, love that.
You know, today's shiny toy can very, very quickly become tomorrow's technical debt. And, you know, you see it in new markets. Like right now in AI, everybody's coming out with an AI tool of one sort or another. You know there's going to be some type of shakeout there. Just because there has been in every other technology that's come out in the last, 50 years.
Percentage of tech that made it. Love it.
Yeah.
What's another one?
We
got to have top three at least. I won't make it five.
User productivity. In other words, the people using the true effect that you're having on the systems that you're implementing. I mean, everybody does project completed on time and all that. But, you know, what is the business value that's created through the projects that IT has implemented?
That's a difficult one. You really have to, because there could be a lot of correlations there.
I'll give you
depending on whatever the project is, you know.
I'll give you another one. And it's, how would I describe it? Strategic flexibility.
How do you measure that?
I think that the new rock stars in IT are the enterprise architects. Okay. The reason is because they have to come up with an architectural structure for all of their combination of hardware and software.
That's like saying,
it's strategic risk is the other side.
Number of silos we've eliminated. That's like saying less number of silos.
Well, yeah, but I, in addition to that, what I would say is it's the flexibility to implement new technologies into your existing infrastructure.
Yes. Percentage of roadblock capability. Yes.
Now these sound rather.
How do you measure that though? That sounds kind of wild. Like, how do you measure that? We're better because we're more flexible. I mean,
That's the goal. The measurement of that one can be really difficult, and quite frankly, for people to understand it, even outside of the IT space.
That's
but
important.
Yet it's a crucial, crucial requirement to be able to do that. It's called strategic risk from, you know, the other side of the coin, is that if the market, if the business people, whoever they are, it could be a municipality wanting to implement a new, you know, tax collection thing or a new CRM system, how easy can you do it? An example of that is like when Europe came up with GDPR, you know, the privacy thing.
I get it.
Now California is doing it. How fast can IT be able to adjust to be able to do it? When you move to cloud computing, is what's the ability for them to be able to do it?
If WordPress blew up tomorrow and there was no WordPress, how quickly could we migrate all of these 1,000 websites to a different platform?
Yes. Or if WordPress had this great new feature, you know, did you architect WordPress in a way that allows you to implement?
Without malware attacks, yes, from Russia.
Another one, and this is sort of, I think, getting to, I'm among my various IT jobs in the past, I was a DBA, so I love data. Is the data is truly the new oil, as they're referring to it? Because, you know, if you think about it, what is machine learning? I mean, machine learning is, in fact, a way, like, when it automatically calculates, if you got to try to get life insurance and it comes back right away, can you or can't you? What it's doing is machine learning is an algorithm that reads a data set. So the question would be is how good is the quality of the data and the flexibility of the data and the ability for this part of your data to connect to another part of your data to be able to move toward, among other things, you know, AI-based applications.
You just made me think of something. It goes in alignment with what your daughter is doing too, right? Because there's a friend of mine. His name's Mark Isaacson. He owns Village Green Apothecary and IQU Health. And what they're doing with the data is amazing. So you go get your DNA tested. He takes all the biomarkers and the genetic the genetic anomalies, or what do you call it? What's the X-Men morphing thing? What do you call that? The genetic, the genetic morphs and the things that are not normal, right?
Yeah.
So they take your DNA, they map that out. So you've got that data, first of all, right? Then you get blood tested and you get all of your allergies and everything tested. So now we know kind of like what you're allergic to. Mm-hmm. Then this is the big thing that he does. Takes that, he has an API into the what's it called? Whatever the health ministry is, whatever the, in America, why can't I think of the name of the organization? API into all of their data,
yeah,
and maps via zip code where you've lived and the potential toxins that you've put into your body over your life that you've,
wow,
you've drinking in. And then correlates that to diet plans and future predictability of, like, you know, just think of where the future predictability of disease could go and everything. If you take DNA, you take geographical location, how you grew up, what you've been eating your whole life, and then correlate with blood tests and all that other stuff. There's a lot that could be done there from a data standpoint. That's just made me think of that.
That's fascinating.
I thought that because your daughter's doing genetic, you know, whatever study. Yeah.
You know, anywhere where you can integrate different types of data, like I'll give you another one, is what a lot of fundraising organizations are doing. You know, let's say you and I donate $25 each to some charity.
Okay.
They'll do an analysis of our zip codes and more particularly data like from Zillow.
Uh-huh.
And if you're living in a $10 million mansion,
yeah,
and I'm living in, let just me say, not a $10 million mansion,
yeah,
Is who do you think they're going to go after for a bigger share of wallet? Me, maybe $25 was as much as I could put into it. But if you're living in a $3 million home, if they could potentially come to you, or would come to you first looking for bigger donations than they would come to me, by bringing together what seems like separate types of information brought together to provide new value. That's another way of, to your question on measurement, is how well is the organization overall, with IT's leadership, using the data they have in new and inventive ways.
That'd be great if we could do that internally with the psychology of our end users internally. The data that Facebook and some of these social media companies has is probably way beyond what anyone really truly knows.
Yeah, I mean, even little firms like us, the people who've taken our certifications, uh-huh. You know, is we analyze, you know, where they're from or what industries they're in and things along that line. Some of it had to be manually calculated, and it's, oh yeah, I bet this is that. And, you know, so it's not 100% clean. But what we did was we found that 15% are coming from local and state municipalities. We learned we have a certain amount coming from financial services or manufacturing or mm-hmm. other consulting or other areas. And what that allowed us to do by adding that piece of data tied into their industry is, where are we going to market? You know, where do we have the deepest penetration for our two IT leadership certifications?
So let's end with that. Eric, where do people get started with you at ITML, IT Management and Leadership Institute? What would your suggestions be for people listening to the show? How can you help them? What courses or things that you have that would be vastly helpful and exponentially helpful to anyone in an IT management role, IT director role, even CTO, CIO?
Okay, well, thank you for asking. First thing I'd say is we offer free monthly webinars on IT management related topics. Just Great. Go to our site, click on registration, and you'll see they're all out there till the end of this year.
Let's get some of your links in the podcast. So Greg or Adam, now we've got multiple people working behind the scenes here. Let's add some of these links.
That would be great. And they're for anyone who wants to take it. Then from there, if you're a soon-to-be IT manager, so you've been in IT for a while, you're looking for a credential or to gain some knowledge. So mm-hmm. from a soon-to-be IT manager up to about 5 years of IT management experience, we're the governing body for the IT Management and Leadership Professional, ITMLP. That's been quoted in CIO.com and Indeed, you know, all the kind of places that say that we're real and fun. We're actually awesome. Starting to see it as a preferred certification in the job in job descriptions. Okay, but then if you're, say, above that, I'll refer to it as an IT manager of IT managers, or you're just an IT manager with some pretty good experience. We have what we call our IT Management and Leadership Executive. If you go to our website and click on certifications, you'll see both of those described. At the end of the day, the one that's right for you is the one, when you look at the topics that are in it, that resonate with you most, that will help you with your job.
Beautiful. So go to the ITML website. Obviously, tell them that Dissecting Popular IT Nerds sent you over and you were listening to the podcast and now I signed up. So that would be really cool. Eric, been a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for being on Dissecting Popular IT Nerds.
Thank you, Phil. Great to be here and great podcast you have. I've listened to a bunch of them. Anyone that this is the first one, the people before me, they're way smarter than me. So
we got good and bad ones. We've had better shows, good shows. It's just how it is.
Great to be with you, Phil.